Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. I'm Jason Powell. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of WWE Raw. Monday's WWE Raw was the penultimate edition of WWE Raw. The show was live from Brooklyn, New York at Barclays Center. This, I talked, I guess, in the All Access Daily show on Monday about my current level of enthusiasm for the show. And going into the show, it was at roughly a 5 out of 10. And coming out of the show, it's at roughly a 5 out of 10. There's probably going to be an increase, a natural one that there is during the final week, you know, as you get closer to the big event, whatever it is. Typically, you know, your anticipation level starts to increase. And I don't think that doesn't mean that WWE did a poor job on this show. You know, they focused on the key matches on the Raw side. They did a solid job. I think it's just, it is what it is this year. As far as the lineup is concerned, it's I'm not blown away by it. There's not a particular match that I'm just really anxious to see. I guess if I had to pick one, just with so many questions about it, maybe Undertaker and Roman Reigns. We've seen Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg before. Doesn't mean I'm not looking forward to it, but I'm not on the edge of my seat either. Maybe once the bell rings on WrestleMania Sunday, it'll be a different story. But there's not that dream match. There's not that match that, you know, what's AJ Styles doing? Well, it looks like AJ is going to be facing Shane McMahon. Doesn't mean it can't be a fun match. Maybe I'm being too generous. But there's just, I think it really is just, this is the Mania lineup, and it's not terrible, but I'm not wowed by it either. And so with that in mind, I just think maybe it's natural that my level of enthusiasm is just kind of somewhere in the middle and is likely to go up. I mean, we'll certainly see what they do on the go-home show. They still have SmackDown on Tuesday and, of course, SmackDown again next week as well. Now that SmackDown is live on Tuesday nights, we're not getting that best-of show. We're actually getting a full edition of SmackDown. If I sound a little bit rough, it is because if you missed the All Access show, I'm battling a cold or allergies or something. So I do apologize for that. But the show opened with a recap of Mick Foley, Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, and Seth Rollins from last week. And then Michael Cole welcomed viewers to the penultimate edition of Raw on the Road to WrestleMania. He was joined on commentary by Corey Graves and Byron Saxton. Mick Foley headed to the ring for a promo. He had a good reaction from the crowd. He read a prepared statement that was clearly, as he started talking, you could tell the idea was that this was written by Hunter and Stephanie. And he said he put his job in jeopardy last week when he put Mr. Sacco in Triple H's mouth, and for that he apologized. He kind of laid it on thick with some of this, and he said, for the good of WWE WrestleMania and my own personal sanity, effective immediately, I am taking a leave of absence. And that was the end of the speech. And then he tore up the paper, and he started screaming, index cards. And he said Triple H handed him index cards 10 minutes before the show. His mic started to cut out, and he yelled about there being so much more he wanted to do. Every time he would, you could hear a few words, and then the volume would drop. And, of course, this was by design. Stephanie came out, and she said, what's the matter, Mick? Your mic not working? She accused Foley of worrying about what was best for Foley and getting Foley chanced and doing what's best for business. And she said she had two words she'd been waiting to say to him for a long time. You're fired. And off mic, she told Foley to get the hell out of her ring. He went to the apron. Sami Zayn's music played. And he came out with the mic in hand and told Stephanie that what she was doing to Foley was wrong. He said that she'd been wrong about a lot of her decisions, but nobody has the guts to tell her to her face. And then she asked him to help his broken-down old mentor down the stairs so they could get on with the show. So she's just kind of dismissive of Sami Zayn. Fans were chanting CM Punk, and I'm thinking, how about you chant Sami Zayn? You know, I mean, I don't mind the Punk chants, but it's like, you got a pretty good one going here with Sami and Foley against Stephanie. Maybe you want to focus on that. But Foley went to ringside, and that Punk chant was the least of WWE's concerns on this show, but we'll get into that more as we go on. But Sami entered the ring and said Foley has shown more class during his time as GM than she has in her entire life. And Zayn said that she should be ashamed of herself. And Stephanie said, Sammy's a talented guy, but he's not at a level where he can interrupt her or even speak to her. and she told him to go backstage and think about how he would make this all up to her. He teased leaving and then stopped, and she said they could play his little ska music, and he could do his little dance, and Zayn said the smart thing would be for him to leave, but he's more concerned about doing the right thing. Finally, a babyface in WWE not worrying about the fallout, how it's going to affect him politically, just standing up for what's right. That was nice to see. We need to see more of that in WWE rather than letting the heel authority figures get all this heat. And really, after a while, it's like, what good does it do? You see Hunter wrestle usually once a year, maybe twice. Stephanie never gets her comeuppance. The last time I remember was Vicky Guerrero's last show. It's just kind of like, what good does this do? But Samoa Joe's music played, and he headed to the ring. He was dressed in his ring gear, and Stephanie told Sammy it was okay. She told Joe that it was okay. She had it covered. She told Foley that he was out once and for all, and then she booked Zayn against Joe as the opening match, and Joe jawed at Foley at ringside, and that was just enough of a distraction for Zayn to perform a flip dive onto Joe heading into a commercial break. And then coming out of the break, the opening match, it was Samoa Joe beating Sami Zayn in 12:20. We got a commercial break during the match, but we saw a good chunk. And it was mostly Joe with Zayn doing his comeback down the stretch. You had Zayn doing a dive through the ropes into a DDT at one point. Joe ended up catching him, going for the Huluva kick, though, slammed him down with the Uranagi, and then applied the Coquina clutch and got the win that way. So, and I liked this match because it was another case of Joe looking dominant, yet there was enough of a hope spot in there for Sammy that I really felt like this worked for both men. I still continue to feel like Sami Zayn's in a really good spot. I know people would like to see him do more, and I've even said, boy, I wish they would have moved him to SmackDown where he could where he could be a much more meaningful player. You know what? Long term, though, I think it might be better to have him doing what he's been doing this whole time. And yeah, it hasn't always been fun. I think we're getting into a good stretch with him here. There's been some times where it's looked like they haven't had any real plans for him, but I think long term it benefits him when the time is right, and maybe it's coming sooner rather than later when you see him out there working with Stephanie McMahon. There's going to come a point, though, where Sammy is going to, if they ever get around to it, they can put him in a major slot, and people will be craving him winning his first championship, whether even if it's at the secondary level. If they do it right, it's going to mean something, and certainly if they put him in a world championship position, a big build to him winning that. I think it helps when he goes through a phase like this. It's a phase that I was hoping the Bayley character would go through, so that whenever it was time to pay that off long term, it would mean so much more. You waited so long to see it. And so, yeah, that could be happening with Sammy. We'll see. The other thing I thought of, too, with all the talk of roster changes and everything post-Mania, well, could this be step one toward Sammy being sent to SmackDown somehow? As punishment, not even as punishment, but just Steph wanted to get rid of him. Just something to consider. We had footage of Braun Strowman putting Reigns through a table and in the past, and then the broadcast team hyped their match. We had some additional hype from the broadcast team, and when they came back from another break, the ads for SmackDown that played consistently throughout the show focused on Shane McMahon and AJ Styles. Then we had Mick Foley telling Sami Zayn backstage what he did was dumb, but he also thanked him and said he appreciated it. And Zayn said that they needed Foley to stand up for them, and they hugged. Sammy said they say never meet your heroes, but he's glad he met Foley. And then Mick started to make his exit while Cesaro and Sheamus were there to thank him for putting them together. And then he also gave quick handshakes to a trio of cruiserweights. Foley stopped when he spotted Bayley, and they shared a long hug, and then Foley turned and spotted Triple H watching them. And after a stare down, Hunter smiled and said, "Have a nice day." And Foley was shown walking out of an exit door. So it certainly looks like Mick Foley being written out. I was hoping that he would be able to stick around and appear at WrestleMania. And maybe they still will. I mean, there's nothing. Hunter's match, it certainly looks like, is going to be a no DQ type of match, as it usually is. So there's nothing saying that they can't use Foley. I just don't know when his surgery is scheduled for. And I wouldn't be surprised if he lets people know if that's coming up soon. He's been pretty open and honest with his need for, I think it's a hip replacement surgery. Now, if it's something they had to do before Mania, well, obviously you get it. But I'm just not sure where things stand on that. But he was certainly written off of Raw here for the time being. I was initially kind of hoping it would just be, yeah, he's taking a leave of absence, and then they could bring him back when the time is right. Let's face it, they can still bring him back when the time is right if they want to. You know, this is not the first time Foley's been fired or something like that, I'm sure. So I just don't have the memory to give you specifics. But if they want to bring him back in that role, they can. And if this is it for Foley, as someone who was kind of when Foley was named the GM, I think it turned out great. I think he's done a really nice job, especially down the stretch. There were definitely times when Mick would yell for the sake of yelling. It came across like, especially early in his run. But for me, it wasn't that I disliked Mick Foley and didn't want to see him in the role. I just kind of wanted something fresh. And we'd seen Foley play that part, but there was a different spin on it. And Mick Foley truly cared. You could tell. You know, he wanted to make the most of his segments. You can just tell he's a guy who's happy to be involved. And I think he did a good job. My original pick was Kurt Angle, who is now going in the Hall of Fame, and we'll see what the future holds for him coming out of WrestleMania. The broadcast team recapped Triple H attacking Seth Rollins last week, and then they showed footage of Rollins working out in Birmingham, Alabama. They claim that he went back to the rehab facility the next day after Raw last week after that attack, and he's still determined to make it back for WrestleMania. And they said the question is whether he will. And they interviewed his trainer, Kevin Wilk, and Wilk said that the only thing that saved Rollins last week was his knee brace, and he called him the most driven athlete he's ever worked with. And then Cole said that they're only 13 days away from WrestleMania, and he questioned whether Seth could be ready by then, and Wilk gave kind of a long pause, and he said it's going to take several months before he's really ready to compete, and he said no doctor in America will clear him for WrestleMania. George Sahorian, he was never given his license plate. Okay. Charlotte then made, real quick on this, fine. You know, I mean, they're just setting the stage that, okay, we talked to his trainer, and the trainer's saying no, and so it made perfect sense. Then Charlotte made her entrance, and Saxton said she would get a revenge on Dana Brooke after the break. When they came back, it was Charlotte defeating Dana Brooke in 3:35. Dana last week, I think, was impressive the way the crowd rallied behind her. I mean, I think so much of it is that she was going after Charlotte. It's not that there's like a connection with Dana Brooke in the audience yet. I cringed when Dana first walked out. She has the gear that she wore, and it's all subjective, but the gear she wore on this show always makes me cringe. It's like, when you're a heel, go ahead and wear it, but not as the babyface. It's just, I don't know, something about it that, like, this looks tacky. But she wore that gear, and you can find footage from the show if you want to see what I'm talking about. Just not, it doesn't, I don't know, just jumps out in a negative way for me for some reason. But she ended up as the early aggressor. She ended up taking a big boot to the face and being pinned clean off a big boot to the face from Charlotte. That was it. Wow. And then Charlotte kicked Brooke to ringside afterward. So that turn led to nothing, and I didn't figure they were going to do a whole lot with this going into WrestleMania with Charlotte in the Women's Championship match. But I thought, well, maybe there's a way to kind of keep them apart on TV for the next couple of weeks and kind of, you know, go back to this coming out of WrestleMania. No, they turned Dana last week, and they've already had Charlotte beat her this week. I can't say that I was really anxious to see that program to begin with, but now you've just killed it off in 1 week. So if you're asking, well, what was the point of turning Dana Brooke? My guess is just they had a shortage of babyface women on the Raw side, and they had to turn someone, and they went with Dana Brooke. Then we had the broadcast team hyping the upcoming segments. We got a Superstar Facts graphic on Chris Jericho, noting that he'd won 30 titles throughout the course of his career, and also noted that he beat Rock and Steve Austin in the same night. Like, yeah, I think we've all heard that one. Backstage, Stephanie McMahon approached a sad Bayley and asked if she needed a hug. Bayley told Stephanie that she didn't want a hug from her, said she admired Stephanie when she was growing up because she thought she was such a strong woman. Huh? More on that in a little bit. She said she has seen her use her power to hurt other people throughout the 7 months she's been on the roster. Stephanie said it takes a strong woman to do what she does, just as it does to be women's champion. And she booked Bayley against Nia Jax for later in the show. She said that if Nia wins, she will get a spot in the Raw Women's title match at WrestleMania, which would make it a four-way. And she also said that their match would be a no-DQ match between Bayley and Jax. Four-ways are always no-DQ, so. But The idea is here is that Stephanie it was punishing Bayley for her little moment with Mick Foley. I guess I said we'd get back to it. The thing that kind of made me stop and shake my head for a second was Bayley talking about how she always admired Stephanie because she thought she was so powerful. And it's like there was never a time when Stephanie was really truly good. I mean, minor moments here and there, but she's basically played the same witch for all these years. And so, I mean, I don't know, maybe the younger Bayley was into evil, maniacal witches, the character. I don't know, but they just kind of like they're. She's always been this way. Maybe you were just naive. I don't know, Bailey. Then at the top of the second hour, Chris Jericho made his entrance to host the highlight reel with his guest, the real Kevin Owens. And I was worried about this. I'm like, all right, are they going to go really, overly cute with this? Is there going to be like a mini version of Kevin Owens that Jericho is going to pick on or something? Is this going to be like campy Jericho comedy? No, it wasn't. He had a photo of Kevin Owens on the big screen. It was a 16-year-old Owens wearing a Y2J shirt and posing Chris Jericho style in his bedroom. He said that there was a Jericho poster on one side, as he pointed that out, and then a busty blonde, I believe it was Sonny, on the other. And Jericho said he was marking out, man. I think he expected a big reaction from that one. Crowd didn't really give him one for that line, but at this point, I'm like, good. This is better than what I feared this was going to be. That's for sure. He also had a text or some sort of direct message exchange that was labeled July 5th, 2014, and they put that on the big screen. And Owens asked Jericho for advice because he was worried about pissing people off. And Jericho said he wanted to see the real face of Owens at WrestleMania, and he showed footage of Owens looking shocked to see him when he showed up at Fastlane. Jericho said they were never best friends. He's not his friend. He's his hero and his idol. And Jericho said that when they meet at WrestleMania, it will send Owens back to being a 16-year-old nerd, and he'll realize that what he got himself into at that point. And Jericho asked what happens when you betray him, and he held up his pen, teasing that he was about to add him to the list. Well, Samoa Joe walked onto the stage with without entrance music, and then Owens attacked a distracted Jericho from behind, roughed him up, put him down on the pop-up powerbomb, picked up Jericho's list, tore it, even putting some of it in his mouth and chewing it, got loud boos from the fans, and then he did Jericho's pose over him, and then ended up leaving the ring. Cole hyped a sit-down interview with Triple H, an in-ring sit-down interview for later in the show, and they went to a commercial. But yeah, really good stuff. I like just kind of the a little bit of history there. I mean, I don't think it's a big surprise that Kevin Owens, a Canadian kid, was a big fan of Chris Jericho as a kid. Just a little thing that I couldn't help but feel while watching this. A lot of 16-year-olds at home right now are they nerdy 16-year-olds if they have a Chris Jericho poster in their room or whatever the case is? Just one little thing. I get what Jericho was going for here, but I are those 16-year-old kids marking out, man? And in a way they are, but is that such a bad thing? We went to TJ Perkins and Brian Kendrick in a match that they couldn't wait to get over. 1 minute and 25 seconds it took for Brian Kendrick to put Perkins away off of sliced bread number two. And then after the match, Kendrick asked where Akira Tozawa is. And he said he was, Kendrick said, "I'm out here, I'm a sitting duck," but Tozawa's not even in the country. He said that in order to travel to the U.S., you need a passport. And then he pulled out what he said was Tozawa's passport and claimed he found it on the ground. And he said that was his latest lesson. Be careful what you leave lying on the ground. So, yeah, Kendrick has stolen the U.S. passport of Akira Tozawa. Why bother with the match? I mean, a minute and 25 seconds. It was bad enough when WWE was giving us 3 minute matches. And if this is. There's a difference between, all right, Austin Aries is fairly new to TV. They want to give him a quick and decisive squash win over somebody. This is, a match between two former champions. We've seen them have good long matches together. A minute and 25 seconds is just like, again, why bother? Why are you even going to do this if that's all the time you care to give these guys? I don't like what it did to Perkins. I don't like what it does to the Cruiserweight division. It's, on Raw now, you went 3 minutes, felt brief, and now we're down to a minute and a half. And these matches are, If they're, I don't know. I mean, WWE's got to do something to shake this up. They can't just keep giving a minute and 25 seconds and expect 205 Live to grow in terms of people watching the show and just popularity of the cruiserweight division. They gotta, you can see if they want to look do take this approach for WrestleMania season, fine. But coming out of Mania, I really hope they get a little more discipline and actually try to make that division work. Coming out of a commercial break, Michael Cole set up a recap of the Roman Reigns and Shawn Michaels segment from the week before, including the clip of Braun Strowman clotheslining Roman Reigns on the ramp. Then Reigns was shown backstage. The fans booed heavily, and Charlie Caruso interviewed Reigns, who did the "with all due respect" line again. If you recall, I've been pointing out that Reigns likes to say "with all due respect," and then he buries the person that he's about to talk about. Last week, it was pointing out that Shawn had lost his career to Taker. With Taker, I think it was "with all due respect, it's my yard now." And it's like, there's nothing more insulting to Undertaker, to someone in his position than saying you're taking what's his. But I think we now know it's by design that Reigns is doing this, because he said, "with all due respect," he thinks it's time. He said the only time he thinks about Undertaker is when he pictures him lying flat on his back in the middle of the ring at WrestleMania. So yeah, with all due respect, the only time I think about you is when I'm beating your ass. That kind of a thing. Reigns said, "Someone has to teach Strowman a lesson because this is my yard." Huh? "It's your yard, so someone has to teach him a lesson." Okay. They went to the broadcast team setting up a Goldberg and Lesnar video. What they did was air two kind of a two-part deal. For the first part, they focused on Goldberg returning, beating Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, and then they came back to the second part of it later in the show. By the way, Brock Lesnar was at the show. He did appear in front of the live crowd again. It was a post-match. He was advertised locally, never advertised for Raw itself, and just beat up Big Show after the show again. That was their dark segment. So it's just this deal that they have worked out with Brock Lesnar is a strange one. I don't know why you wouldn't. I don't know. I don't know if they're contractually they can only have him on so many times, or if they just thought figured this would be a week to not have him on. I don't know. Then we had Nia Jax being shown walking backstage, and she, or Saxon recalled the story being that she could earn the title shot with the win. They went to a commercial, and they came back from that. Stephanie informed Sheamus and Cesaro that they would face Luke Gallows, Karl Anderson, Enzo Amore, and Big Cass in a handicap match, and they had to win in order to keep their spot in the triple threat match at WrestleMania for the Raw tag titles. She said they would be completely off the show if they lost that match, and the broadcast team was there to point out that she's punishing everyone who showed support for Mick Foley. Well, not those three cruiserweights, because screw them, apparently. No one cares. Stephanie McMahon doesn't even care to punish the cruiserweights. I didn't even care to list their names. I think it was like Mustafa Ali. Was it Grand Metalik, one of them? Maybe, no, I bet it was Lince Dorado, and I don't remember the third. But yeah, it's like Stephanie's punishing everyone, but the three cruiserweights, no big deal. She just doesn't care enough. In the fourth match, it was Nia Jax pinning Bayley in a no DQ match in 10:35, and sure enough, it is now a four-way match at the at WrestleMania. It'll be Bayley defending against Nia, Charlotte, and Sasha Banks. They did have Charlotte and Sasha watching on separate backstage monitors. This again was a no DQ match, and you ended up with Jax performing a Samoan drop for the win, and they just kind of showed quick reactions of Charlotte and Sasha. Really didn't sell anything coming out of the match, but I guess the idea here is that Jax has Bayley's number, if nothing else. She's been dominating her, and other than that win other than Sasha's one win, she's kind of had her number too, which they're not really playing up much. But it's a four-way. Once it became a triple threat, I can't say I care. Would it be better with just the other three were involved? Maybe, but I also have faith in ideally the women, and also whoever's going to be putting this match together with them, that they can effectively work Nia Jax in key spots where it might be a better match. But I just would rather see a singles match. But if we're not going to get one, I can't say that I'm just bothered by them making it a four-way rather than a triple threat. We had Saxton setting up the latest Women's History Month video. Last week it was Billie Jean King. This week it was Johnny Mae Young. Mae Young was the latest video, latest woman to be featured in a WWE video. The fans did give us a nice round of applause when it was done. And then they went to a commercial, and we got a WrestleMania video that aired. As of Monday night, we were 13 days away. Michael Cole stood in the ring and introduced Triple H for the sit-down interview. And we will get to that in just a moment, but I do want to take just a minute to tell you about .NET Membership. If you enjoy these long-form audio reviews, know that they are available on Monday nights for .NET members every Monday. And also, the members hear long-form audio reviews of WWE SmackDown, the NXT television show, 205 Live, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, and all the major pay-per-view events from the big companies after each and every pay-per-view event. If you are interested in membership to the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, just visit the main page, click into the sign-up area. Three different pricing options available, $7.50 for 1 month. That'll get you in for WrestleMania month, a great time to sign up. Or you can save yourself some money with our six-month option, or take that annual option, which whittles $2 off the price, bringing it down to an average of $5.50 per month. Again, a great time to sign up. It is the ad-free version of the site. I'm just kind of breezing through some of the options available, but clearly you enjoy audio if you're listening to our all-access audio. Know that we have a ton more available, including the .NET Weekly audio show. Will Pruitt will be joining me. I believe the plan is, if I'm feeling up to it, we're going to record on Wednesday. So it'll be kind of an earlier edition of .NET Weekly. It goes out anywhere between Wednesday and Friday, so just kind of on the early end of things. Just looking forward to talking with Will about WrestleMania season and everything that's been going on here this week. It should be a good time to talk with him. But again, all the details on membership available on the main page of ProWrestling.net. And as always, if you have a question, you can hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet. Now back to the show. It's a good time. We were just about at the top of the second hour when Hunter made his entrance, and they did hype that he's going to be all over ESPN on Tuesday, starting with ESPN's First Take, 9 Central, 10 Eastern Time, if you want to check that show out. If I remember, maybe I'll try to set the DVR tonight, because I can see myself forgetting to check that out. But I'll try to keep an eye out for that. If I miss that one, I'm sure, he's sounds like he's there to make the round, so I'm sure there'll be plenty of Triple H talk coming out of his day in Bristol, Connecticut. But Hunter asked the fans how they were doing and said, "I'm having a nice day." So he's mocking them over Mick Foley. And Cole asked him about the diagnosis for Rollins, and he said he's disappointed. He wanted to fight him badly. He said he's in the best shape of his life. Fans chanted CM Punk again. Hunter just kept talking over them. And they faded pretty quickly. Hunter said it's not his fault that Rollins won't make it to WrestleMania. He said Rollins made the biggest mistake of his life when he stopped listening to him, started listening to the fans. And that kind of became a theme of this, was him, Hunter, blaming the fans for what's happening with Rollins, and blaming the fans for what's happened to Mick Foley, including, pointing out some of his physical ailments and saying that's on the fans too. And then we had footage of last week's angle that Hunter had Cole play, and then he said, "That's on you." And telling the fans what happened to Rollins was also on them. He said people call Rollins the architect, but he's actually the person who gave Rollins the blueprint. And he stood up and ended up mocking the millennials in the crowd for running their mouths. And he said he made things way too easy on Rollins, and it was laughable that the crutch picked up an actual crutch and beat Rollins with it. And he said, "At this moment right now, I'm officially done with Seth Rollins." And he ended up pulling out an envelope, and he told Cole to go ahead and give this to Seth when he sees him. Contained nosebleed seats for WrestleMania, and he asked Cole to give them to Seth Rollins, and then Hunter teased leaving, and then stopped. And he said, "Is there a way we could still fight at WrestleMania?" He said he could drop a contract for an unsanctioned match with Rollins, so he can't sue him once he destroyed him. Hunter said, asked the fans if that's what they want, and he said, "Show up here next week, I'll drop the paperwork, sign the document, and it will be at WrestleMania, Seth Rollins against Triple H." He played to the crowd again, and then got them to cheer that, the match idea, and then told Rollins to show them, "Or are you a friggin' coward?" he ended up asking before leaving. It was a good promo. I have enjoyed what we've seen from Triple H in this latest go-round. I was really worried when this whole thing started. If you recall, Hunter was very much delivering a babyface promo. It's like, well, if Hunter wants to be a babyface, why don't they just turn his damn character? It was that bad. I mean, it was just tearing down Seth Rollins, and there was, like, nothing there was very little about the promo that made you dislike Hunter more than you just disliked Rollins, because what Hunter was saying about Rollins rang so true. Since then, it's been different, and we've had good heel mic work from Triple H. It's been a nice improvement, even over what we saw last year with leading into Reigns and Triple H. I thought was a little too babyface at times, too, but I think Hunter is doing a much better job this year. Then we all learned how to pronounce, I've already forgotten, Tinashe, is that it? She is the one performing America the Beautiful at WrestleMania. Yeah, maybe if you're younger than me, you're like, hey, I know how to pronounce that, idiot. I can't say I'm familiar with her. But I will be, because she is performing, again, America the Beautiful at WrestleMania. Fifth match, it was Sheamus and Cesaro beating Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson, Enzo Amore, and Big Cass in 35 seconds. This wasn't much of a handicap match. They spent more time on the mic beforehand than they did doing anything in the ring. You had Gallows and Anderson attacking Enzo and Cass before the bell, I guess because they had all sorts of names for them as bald guys, like tag team names for them, chrome domes and things like that. Take it from a bald guy, it's not offensive. There's really not much you can say at this point to a guy who shaves his head that he hasn't heard. But anyway, Cass ended up recovering, pulled Gallows to the floor, and then Cesaro held Anderson. This was similar to the old the Hart Foundation finisher with the heart attack clothesline. Instead of a clothesline being hit, though, it's Sheamus blasting the opponent with the brogue kick. But Cesaro is holding him up kind of the same way that Jim Neidhart used to hold up the opponents for the clothesline. And so they got the win that way. And then afterward, Cass and Enzo worked over the tag team champions. So all is well. Your Raw tag title match remains the same. It is a triple threat with those three teams facing off. They went to the broadcast team doing some pimping for WrestleMania in the network. And then we went backstage with Big E and Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. You had Woods standing in the middle. You had E and Kingston both staring at him. And E asked if there was something that Woods wanted to talk about. And Woods, without selling it in any way, said, WrestleMania! And then just they went into their shtick talking about the type of matches, or the matches that they're looking forward to on the show that they're hosting. So I like this because it's in line with New Day shtick. You know, you would... If anyone was going to say something a little bit edgy that really doesn't cross a line, it's New Day. If there were another situation, you would expect them to say that didn't involve them. You'd expect some little witty comment about it or something like that. And so it would have felt pretty lame had they not addressed it in some way. And I think it would have opened the door to a lot more negativity from this crowd and maybe even future crowds if it came off like, oh, these guys are trying to hide from that. We're not going to let them. This crowd, well, let's just say they chanted something other than New Day Rocks. It's it kind of similar in terms of number of letters, and it starts with an F. So the crowd had some fun. They also chanted "We Want Paige" in New Day, New Day Rocks rhythm during the women's match too. So it was not a night without its acknowledgement from the Brooklyn crowd about the whole leak, the sex tape leak, whatever you want to call it, involving Woods and Paige and Brad Maddox as well. It could have been worse, you know, than it was. I mean, I don't think WWE is going to be exactly pleased by New Day Fs being chanted on their broadcast. And that's something that we're going to have to wait and see if that picks up. I'm sure that's the one they're like, anyone but this one, because they're not going to want to have to try to censor a crowd week in, week out. I don't think it's going to last that long. But you had to know. I mean, you're just days removed from a kind of a sex scandal, if you will, a sex tape scandal, and they're in Brooklyn. Yeah, you know, ouch. That's probably not the ideal place to be. You want to be somewhere like Omaha, or I'll even say St. Paul, Minnesota, where I think you might not have as many people reacting the way the Brooklyn crowd did. Maybe you would, I don't know. But sixth match of the night was Austin Aries defeating Tony Nese in 8:05. So the match that I felt like could have went a minute and 30 seconds ended up going 8 minutes and 5 seconds. They did take a commercial break. Aries doing a really big build-up for the pendulum elbow. And the crowd was into the build-up more than they were the actual move. We'll see if that changes now that he's, you know, trying to establish that as kind of his gimmicky type move. He performed the running forearm in the corner and followed up with a discus five-arm and got the win. And afterward, we had Graves explaining that the discus five-arm is, it's called that because it's better than the forearm. And Michael Cole had some weird reaction to it, like, now I understand. I don't remember what his line exactly was, but it just made me think, like, wow, that just sounded really corny and forced. Thanks, Michael. Who's much better than he's been in quite some time, Michael Cole, that is. I think that he's just doing a good job of toning down some of the silly moments like this one. You know, I guess that's why it stood out so much. This would have been kind of par for the course on another show, but we don't have as many moments like this from Cole. They did do a little bit with Neville afterward. He came out, was doing his usual shtick, acting like Aries is beneath him, and then Aries just said he sees a man who knows he has to step in the ring with someone who is above his level, and he said that he will end the facade of Neville being the king of the cruiserweights at WrestleMania. The Emma video aired. She is coming soon. They went to a commercial. And when they came back, we had footage from the Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania. Then we had the broadcast team setting up part two of the Goldberg and Lesnar video package. This one, again, just kind of focused on everything that had happened after the Survivor Series match and leading up to where we are now. I've seen all of this, you know, and so I kind of have to force myself to pay close attention to these. It's a good time for me to catch up if I've fallen behind on a show, or if I got to rewind to see something that I just get distracted during. That's oftentimes how I see a lot of these video packages, unless they come off as something truly special and kind of grab me. And oftentimes that is at WrestleMania. They do such a great job. I didn't feel like they really nailed it here. They just kind of recapped the story. This didn't leave me all fired up about Goldberg and Lesnar, no more than I was going in. Which is kind of the theme of this show. Backstage, we had Braun Strowman telling Charlie Caruso that he would destroy Roman Reigns. And he said that if Undertaker wants to face Reigns at WrestleMania, he better bring a shovel to scrape him off the mat. And then Reigns made his entrance to booze. They took another break. Graves hyped. Didn't they just do this, like, last week? Austin Aries delivering a message to Neville on 205 Live. Could have maybe not last week. I'll bet it was 2 weeks ago. Last week was the five-way. That was like the theme 2 weeks ago. Tune into 205 Live to see Austin Aries deliver a message to Neville. And here we go again. Cole hyped the Hold Harmless Agreement, is what they're calling it. The contract signing between Seth Rollins and Triple H. So the idea is that you can't blame Hunter for what he does to Rollins. Then Graves hyped Reigns and Undertaker for WrestleMania, and Strowman made his entrance for the main event. One quick thing I'll say about this whole Hold Harmless thing that the unsanctioned match they're having, I think that is where guys like Joe and Sami Zayn fit in. I think you're going to see a lot of run-ins. Maybe a Finn Balor? I don't know. I mean, we still haven't seen Finn Balor again. They may just hold out until after WrestleMania to bring back Finn Balor. I'm not sure. Or have him show up on the actual WrestleMania show in kind of a surprise, semi-surprise appearance. I'm not sure. But I just think that, you know, that obviously opens the door for a lot of outside interference and things if they want to go in that direction, if they want to take that direction with things. So that's what I'm guessing. Now, they could end up also in the Battle Royal. There's nothing saying they can't do both, but no real developments as far as where Strowman fits in on this show, which speaking of him, in the main event, he fought Roman Reigns to a no contest because they were showing you that Roman was looking pretty superior at late in the match. He was in the corner and waiting to hit one of his big moves, and presumably the spear, and that's when Undertaker's gong sounded. The lights went out. When they came on, Undertaker was standing in the middle of the ring between Reigns and Strowman, and fans chanted, "Holy shit!" And then Taker turned and looked at Strowman, then he looked back at Reigns, and fans chanted for Undertaker. Strowman approached Taker from behind. Taker sensed it coming and chokeslammed Strowman. Taker appeared to look like he regretted what he did, And then he turned into a spear from Reigns. More on that in a second. Reigns started to boast, kind of talk some smack to take her off mic. Couldn't really make out what he was saying, but you could just tell by the way he was handling it, looking down and kind of being a little cocky. But then Taker, once Reigns left the ring, Taker sat up and got to his feet and made the throat slashing gesture while Roman Reigns was watching this from the distance. And then Taker's music played as Reigns watched from the ramp, and that was the end of the show. That holy, or I'm not the holy shit, but Taker. What it looked like, I had to go back and watch this .NET member. I don't know if he wants his last name out there. I'll just say Jeff was sent a note saying he was wondering if Taker was actually injured there. He knows he's been beat up a little bit lately with the well, pretty significantly over the years with the hip and all of that, and was wondering if it was something with that. And I went back and watched it just to double check, and I think this is what it was. I think the and I kind of acknowledged this possibility in my review on the site to my live coverage. I don't know if it was so much he regretted choke slamming Strowman. That was kind of my first take, and then it was also kind of like, well, or did is it because he knew he left himself vulnerable by turning his attention to Strowman and knowing, okay, oh shit, knowing he's got to turn around and Roman's probably going to be there to take advantage of it. Watching it back, that's how I took it, was the second part of that. That it looked like he got the better of Strowman, choke slammed him. He took choke slammed him fine. It's not a very taxing move for Taker. I mean, it's a guy. It's Strowman's job to get the air on it and all of that. So it's not a likely move to cause a major injury if you're performing a choke slam, unless the guy just doesn't go upright or something. But really, what it was he performs a move and then he takes 3 steps toward the rope, and doesn't there's no sign of any pain or anything out of the ordinary, and then he just kind of grabs the top rope and he's standing in normal position, like he's looking down, kind of admiring his handiwork, and then he says it. So there's nothing on his face that would say he was injured when he did this. There's nothing about his mannerisms, and he ended up taking the spear like a champ and laid there just fine, like he was out cold, and then started selling the effects. So I don't think there was anything wrong with Taker. I'll leave the door open just a little bit for the idea being that there was some sort of a respect moment there with Taker and Strowman initially, and then did Taker not want to have to choke to do what he did to Strowman for some reason? It was just weird that Strowman came out and confronted him, and then walked, or Taker came out and was there to have a stare down with Strowman, who then just walked away in a non-heelish manner the first time they crossed paths. And here we are back now to Taker looking potentially remorseful that he did something to Strowman, but again, I think it was more a case of Taker knew, oh, I just screwed up. I'm about to turn around and I'm about to walk. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm about to eat that shit. I'm about to eat a spear, and that's what he did. So that's my guess. We'll see how they frame it on next week's show. Again, not a bad show. They're focusing heavily on the WrestleMania matches, as they should be. I think the only exception to that would be the one cruiserweight match, but it was 1 minute and 35 seconds or whatever I said, and maybe that's part of the reason why it was kept so brief, is that it really doesn't have anything to do with WrestleMania. I mean, then why have it, I guess, would be my thing. Even Charlotte and Dana Brooke, well, Charlotte's in the WrestleMania title match, so it doesn't directly play into Mania, but it's something, and I guess I don't know what they're doing with Joe and Sami Zayn, but it was very entertaining, and it feels like it's geared towards something at Mania. We'll see what those guys end up doing. And then Stephanie and Foley, I don't know either if it's necessarily WrestleMania related, but it very well could be. But they wrote off Foley in a way that I think he did some really good work heading out. I think that they managed to, yeah, he didn't get to tear them to shreds on the way out and deliver a fiery promo, but you had the feel good moment with him and several talents backstage, and so I think it came off pretty well, and I think that people, for the, by and large, are going to remember this run with Foley as GM mostly positive. I will, at least. I think he did, again, he did a nice job. But as far as WrestleMania is concerned, again, it's the lineup, and I'm just not blown away by the lineup, and I don't know that you're going to be able to really move me much on the go home show and suddenly make me feel like, this is a great lineup after all. It's a good lineup. Is it a good WrestleMania lineup? Is it a great WrestleMania lineup? No, I don't feel like it is. But They got another crack at it next week. We'll see how they do. But that is going to do it for today, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to join Jake Barnett for live coverage of WWE SmackDown at 7 Central, 8 Eastern time, and then 205 live coverage. It'll either be Zach Zimmerman covering the show, or I will be. Zach is hoping to go to the show. We're not sure on that just yet, but one way or another, you'll have live coverage of the 205 live show coming up right after SmackDown. So look for that as your Tuesday night live coverage. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care.